the public hearing on House Bill 2111. I'll open that. Elizabeth, I think you are up. And if I can have the, yeah, are you bringing the sign-up sheet? And two witnesses, and then a moment of silence, and then a couple more.
Long list.
I like the way these sign-up sheets work. And they're so far apart, they wouldn't even sign in next to each other. Okay, Elizabeth, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, with House Bill 2111, what this is doing is increasing the assessed value amount for personal property that is exempt from property taxes from $10,000 to $20,000. It's going to apply to tax years beginning on or after July 1st, 2002. Now, under current law, annually, businesses will file personal property tax returns. And if the total assessed value of the business is less than $10,000, then the business does not have to pay property taxes. In 1997, the legislature increased the assessed value threshold from $3,000 to $10,000 that is exempt from property taxes. And just to give you a little bit of background on personal property, in 1999-2000, it's estimated that there were more than 131,000 personal property tax accounts totaling more than $7.7 billion in assessed value. And a recent survey is the basis of the revenue impact. And this survey of 16 counties' personal property tax accounts revealed that more than 10,000 business taxpayers had business property with assessed value between the $10,000 and $20,000 range. And that was an amount of about $161 million or 2% of the total assessed value of the personal property in the state in that survey. And the tax of that particular amount was $2.7 million from those surveyed counties, which is 16 counties. So the revenue impact from this bill is roughly $3.9 million in 2002-03 and $8.7 million in 2003-05.
Okay. Thank you very much. Jason Williams and J.L. Wilson, you guys want to come on up together? J.L., we'll let you start since it's... Welcome, J.L.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Shetterly, members of the committee. For the record, my name is J.L. Wilson. I represent the National Federation of Independent Business here in Oregon, and currently I have just over 13,000 members. My testimony today will be as comprehensive as I can make it, not only because of the importance of the issue to my members, but because it is a revenue bill. I feel I probably have an added burden of proof on this one. Quite frankly, with NFIB, I represent small business. My recent demographics just came out, and it showed that 14% of my membership employs one person, an additional 14% of my membership employs two people, 29% of my membership employs between three and five people, simple math, 57% of my membership employs fewer than five or fewer people. Average gross sales among NFIB members here in Oregon is $275,000. Now, the governor, over the last interim, convened a small business council, and they met throughout the state with business owners and interested parties to talk about the issues affecting small business. And I think it was about a six-month to a year-long process that culminated with a conference here at Willamette over the course of the summer. But their findings are kind of the genesis of this bill. It's something we've always been interested in. But I think it speaks to the realities of small business that I think drives a proposal like this. And I think you would do well to understand. First of all, being a small business owner really entails you nothing more than working extra hours, making less money, and doing jobs at the end of the day that no one else will do. And I think that the governor's report highlights that adequately when they say that even small businesses which do not fail often provide less economic return to the owners than they might receive working for others and investing those assets. So in other words, you could probably make more money working for somebody else than having your own business. It also highlights the failure rate of small business in excess of 80% after 5 years, a tremendous failure rate for those who engage in entrepreneurial activity and decide to run their own small business. But even after all that, the one thing we do know is that small business drives the economy. 90% of new net jobs are created through small business. In fact, the governor's report highlights that 58% of the workforce is employed in small business. And what we've always known is that small business is the gateway to opportunity for people with good ideas and a willingness to work hard, and that most importantly, it has been the best source of upward mobility that we know of in this state. But as the governor's report also mentions, regulatory burden falls disproportionately on small business. And that's exactly what I'm trying to address through House Bill 2111. In fact, the report says the majority of this regulatory burden falls in the area of tax compliance and record-keeping areas, which is exactly what we're addressing with House Bill 2111. And I think it's important from time to time to review the regulations and rationalize the system, consider what we're doing that unnecessarily encumbers our small enterprises, and remove those barriers. The personal property tax is clearly one of those impediments, as gauged by my membership, as 76% of NFIB members last year saw it as a substantial barrier to their viability, the personal property tax. So it's in this vein that I submit to you House Bill 2111. It simply increases the personal property tax threshold from $10,000 to $20,000. Now, what is the personal property tax? What property does it apply to? It applies to everything from computers, telephone systems, desks, chairs, furniture, fixtures, all the things that go in the everyday running of a business is taxable property. And the threshold, if I have less than $10,000 of personal property in my business, my tax is canceled altogether. Everything over $10,000 is taxed at the $15 per thousand rate. What I'm simply proposing to do is make everything under $20,000 canceled in terms of the personal property tax. Now, my arguments for increasing the exemption generally, I think especially as we head into a soft economy, it makes sense to remove barriers to entrepreneurial activity, and that's my general argument. But more specifically, I think that the personal property tax disproportionately affects small, home-based, or capital-intensive businesses. It's time and money that cannot be invested into your business, and what you have distributed to you is a letter from one of my members. He's a 23-year-old college student who dropped out of college because he had a good idea to run a business. And his paragraph, the second to last paragraph, I think states it more succinctly than I ever could. And he says, from a small business viewpoint, the business personal property tax is just one in a long line of regulatory barriers to small business success. Admittedly, my tax bill was not prohibitive at around $200. However, when combined with the time spent to decipher my taxable property and fill out appropriate forms, it represented a waste of both my personal and financial capital that I could not afford. This is time and money that could have been put to better use when invested in my business. When starting a business, $200 is real money, and I could have used that for letterhead, envelopes, postage, etc. But even more importantly, the time spent complying with the tax is unproductive and can't be passed off to others, which speaks to the regulatory aspects of this bill. You know, government not only taxes money, but what I would probably consider a business owner's most valuable asset is his time and attention. Attention that is put to productive use in the running of a business, especially a startup. And that is something that is compromised, I feel, with the personal property tax, and another reason why I bring it forward to this committee. My second argument is that this discourages the personal property tax I refer to, discourages capitalization. Small business needs adequate capitalization to compete. In this day and age, it means more high-tech equipment, and capital costs are very expensive in this environment, which means the $10,000 threshold is easily passed by progressively smaller businesses. In other words, for me as a small business person to start up, I might need computers, fax machines, those type of things that you need to compete and capitalize in a competitive, more of a high-tech economy. That $10,000 threshold is easily passed nowadays where it wasn't before, is what we're finding in our organization at least. And I think that the discouragement that it has on capitalization does not help our entrepreneurs. My third argument is, quite honestly, I don't think this tax meets the fairness litmus test for a couple of reasons. I'm not sure that any of us would feel too good about paying a tax over and over on equipment that we've already bought and paid for to run our business, which is exactly what the personal property tax does. But second of all, and it's a reason that we supported House Bill 2278, which you heard previously, you're basically taxing somebody on their own initiative, which is, if I have me and my neighbor both buy the same computer, telecommunications equipment, you get the picture, furnitures for a home office, but I decide I want to go down and file an LLC because I want to use this to make my way in the world, all of a sudden my property is taxable where my neighbor's isn't. And it's basically a tax on somebody's initiative because I have a vision, I want to run a business, I want to achieve some things, and that makes my property taxable. And I submit to you that that doesn't meet at least our fairness litmus test. And finally, I think heading into a soft economy, I think precisely now is probably the time when you have the highest concentration of business startups. In fact, historically, we've seen that in our organization, where when you head into a soft economy, a recession, where your bigger companies are laying people off, that is precisely the moment when people are going to start thinking more about working for themselves, about having their own startup business, about going into business for themselves. And I think you'll see a concentration of startups here in Oregon in the next couple of years. My submission to you is that with this jump in business startups, we might want to remove some impediments and help people compete in this environment, help our self-starters compete in this economy. So with a softening economy, I think now is precisely the time where you might want to remove some of those disincentives that are in place. The personal property tax is just one that we happen to feel strongly about with NFIB. I think it makes sense that we should provide every opportunity for success at this juncture, quite frankly, with a soft economy. And I think that House Bill 2111 is a key component of that strategy. And I'll conclude just by saying I think you're perfectly entitled to think of NFIB as a special interest. That's true. But this is very targeted and regulatory relief, tax and regulatory relief that affects very real people taking real risks, making real sacrifices that I think would make any of us uncomfortable in the creation of their own small business. House Bill 2111 is a real opportunity, I think, for us to prove some dedication to our small business people. And again, I want to make sure you know this is tax and regulatory relief dedicated to small business and small business only. Nobody else falls in that $10,000 to $20,000 personal property tax range. As it exists now, I think the numbers say this will free about 14,000 of our smallest businesses from the personal property tax. And that doesn't include the future startups that I think will be helping as well. Now, I know this measure will be opposed because of its $4 million fiscal impact annually, which I believe a quarter of that is cities, a quarter of that's counties, and half of special districts. I know the measure will be opposed because of a perceived exacerbation in the so-called tax shift. I guess my response to that is that the creation of wealth and entrepreneurial activity benefits government through increased tax receipts. And I think House Bill 2111 will help in this regard, but that doesn't happen by itself. It happens with some incentive on the part of business owners. It happens with some sacrifice and initiative on the part of entrepreneurs. And I think the sacrifice is spread around to even government. And finally, with regard to the tax shift, I would just direct you to the testimony I submitted from one of my youngest members, Kyle Benke. And I guess I'd ask, you know, is it somehow better that Kyle Benke shoulders the load than anybody else? I mean, why does it have more intrinsic value that somebody who drops out of school because he has a good idea and a business that he wants to pursue, why is it somehow better that the tax is shifted on to him and he pay that? So that's just a couple of my responses to criticism. I'm sure there'll be more, but I hope you look favorably on House Bill 2111. I think it's the right thing to do and the right time for small business owners, and I'm glad to answer any questions about it.
Questions,
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Hess.
The 97th legislature raised the threshold from 3,000 to 10,000.
Correct.
And there was a voters cut taxes through Measure 5. 92, and then again, you mentioned 47, 50. So that's like three tax breaks there in the last decade. Are you saying that those were insufficient, or that I guess you're saying that more needs to be done in the wake of those three effective tax cuts?
In the context in which I propose this bill, Representative Hask, is that I believe that we have a real opportunity now with business startups, which I believe that we will see a real proliferation of business startups in the next couple of years. You tend to see that with a softening economy, with more displaced workers, who decide that they want to work on their own. My proposal and my argument is, I think that if you want to spur entrepreneurial activity to some degree in a targeted manner that only affects small people, the small guys, the startup guys, the home-based people, that this is probably the best avenue to pursue that. So I look at it as a targeted incentive for small people, which I think ultimately benefits the state in the long run, is my argument.
Representative Bates.
Mr. Chair, was one of the difficulties for a small businessman the difficulty of just complying with this law, of going through the tax tables and figuring out their personal property and all that sort of stuff? Was that a major problem for people doing small businesses?
Thank you. You touched on something that I probably did not adequately address, Representative Bates, and that is the personal property tax form and the compliance with the tax itself. And that, in effect, is half my argument, because you have the money component, but you also have the time and attention that a small person is siphoned away doing something like this when it could be better used running their business. And that is half of my argument. If in fact you fall under the threshold, you check the box that says your property tax was canceled, you sign the form, you send it in. It's not worth the time and attention spent to, as Kyle mentioned, document what property is taxable and what is not, figure out its value, and do the computations. So that you do address half my argument with that question. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Yes.
Considering that difficulty, was there any discussion of a business registration fee for people who have small businesses as a replacement for this at a lower level? It would be less burdensome as far as paperwork is concerned and less burdensome financially also.
If you, Chair Shetterly and Mr. Bates, if that is something that the committee wanted to consider, or even if local jurisdictions wanted to consider, I would consider any of those a better alternative than what is in place.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Jail, I just wanted to correct one thing in your testimony with regard to you buying the computer and the furniture, and your neighbor buying the computer and furniture, and you becoming subject to personal property. Actually, if you go down and form an LLC, as Representative Williams learned from one of his constituents, you don't have to go down to file an LLC to become subject to the personal property tax if you just engage in it even as a sole proprietor in your home, as your piano teacher, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Found out she was supposed to be paying personal property tax on her piano?
That's true. The piano and piano-related equipment. And the worst part was that after she found out about it, and it was through finding out that she had to register, and then she registered, and the county picked up on the fact that once she had registered that she hadn't been paying the personal property tax assessment, they came back and hit her for the fines and penalties for a number of years of late filing. So in Tiger now you have a bunch of little old ladies who have gone underground. Staying at the music store, and if someone's looking at sheet music, you say, you teach piano.
Yeah, well, these things, they kind of open it up. And they,
yeah.
Representative Shetterly, that is one of the reasons why we supported 2278, and one of the problems you see is a lot of people don't even know they're subject to the tax, and that is a problem.
Okay, anything else? Thank you very much. Jason Williams.
Be part of a business.
Chair Shetterly, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jason Williams, Executive Director of the Taxpayer Association. And we come here in support of House Bill 2111. We understand that currently the way the state gets its money from businesses is a tax on profit. And that relationship, as profit grows, so does the revenue to the state. It is a good partnership with business. But this personal property tax is counterproductive to that agreement, because it begins to tax businesses as they try to make profit. And if you think about why a company buys a piece of equipment and then you realize that they get taxed on it, you follow a certain problem. And I just listed in my testimony that I handed out, if you think about it, it's a tax on investing for tomorrow, a tax on protecting the environment, a tax on making life easier for your employees, a tax on producing your product with less waste, a tax on using technology, a tax on cutting down costs, and a tax on becoming more competitive. Those aren't the things that we really want to tax. And not only is it a tax, but the regulatory and the paperwork involved in it is really incredible. For me, you know, it takes me a few hours with a company that I used to work with to work through it, and I end up having to always call the little hotline, talk to someone from the county to make sure I did the formula right. And of course, when you're talking to that person, they realize that they get phone calls throughout the day from small businesses that they're really not quite sure that the formula worked, and then when you finally total it up, you know, the cost of the tax is $100-$200, and it's not worth the 2 or 3 hours that you put into it. But on the way down here, I picked up our form from the county that shows the things that you want to make sure not to forget to add into the tax of your personal property taxes. And I just want to run through a few quick ones. They list your air conditioner, artwork, so we're taxing art now, calculators, cameras, chairs, and remember, each item you have to depreciate. You have to change the value each year to year. So I wonder how well depreciating chairs goes. Decor, desks, filing cabinets, libraries. If you have a library, that's taxed. Linens, mobile phones, safes. If you have a safe where you keep your money, that's taxed. Signs. I really wonder about that one. TV sets, VCRs, and finally typewriters. And these are just things that it becomes such a unfavorable tax in many people's eyes when they have to sit there and go through every single piece of inventory, write out the valuation change, and then if they happen to sell that typewriter or that calculator, you have to let them know to the very month that you sold it last year and keep records of all this. This we just feel is unproductive, and it begins to make small businesses feel resentment of the tax system. And I don't feel like that always exists in terms of the structure of other taxes, but when you begin to feel that the process is somehow unfair and disjointed, it really does not do well for the system as a whole. So we feel like with these small businesses, these people who don't have the professional tax accountants who's either their spouse or their neighbor friend who's doing this for them, these are the people who don't have the time or the money to go through those hours devaluating chairs or typewriters or calculators or the artwork on their building. And so we just ask you to please support House Bill 2111.
Questions for Mr. Williams? Any at all? All right, thank you very much, Jason. Let's bring up the county guys, Commissioners Steve McClure and Gil Riddell. And Michelle, I did get your notes, so we'll bring you up next. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, Gil Riddell, Association of Oregon Counties. Our current president, Union County Commissioner Steve McClure, will comment. I'll try to answer as many of the questions that came up during the first two presentations.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I'm Steve McClure, Union County Commissioner and President of AOC. I'd like to take just a moment and make some comments on the bill that we're looking at, 2111. I think it's very important to state that counties are not in opposition to small business. We've shown that over in the past. In 1997, we supported 2066, which raised the exemption in the personal property tax from $3,000 to $10,000. It reduced by 55% the number of people that were filing those taxes. So we in the past have already supported business. The problem that we have with this current bill, 2111, is it goes beyond the fairness issue. If you look at the four largest counties that represent 53% of the personal property tax, the savings in administration is somewhere in excess of $900,000, and the cost to just counties alone is in excess of $300,000. If you look at what this does over the life of the bill, it's about $8 million a biennium. That's the number that we have. And I think it's important to notice, make a couple of notes on that. We talk about a property tax shift under the current system, since 4750, We're a rate system, and there are no shifts. It's just a reduction in revenue to the receiving entities. And while I looked at the statement, the fiscal impact statement, the state is shown as having zero. If you look at it from the point of schools, where schools get about 40% of property tax in the state of Oregon, that's $3.2 million of biennium. And because of the way that schools are financed, that is a direct impact on the state because of the capitated system that schools are financed. So I think that's an important consideration when you look at this bill. I think a couple points I'd like to talk about. First of all is the paperwork question. I have been in business, in the farming business, and I certainly understand the requirements of the federal government to keep a depreciation schedule of machinery and equipment and everything else. And most small businesses currently do that. You have to, for your federal income taxes, if you're depreciating any of your capital investment, you have to keep those currently. So it's not a brand new process that we're not unfamiliar with in business. I think an important consideration is once you have filed these, when the tax collector, the county tax collector, sends out notice, he sends what you currently have on the list, so that all you have to do every year is modify that list. You have to go in and identify the things that are removed. You have to change the depreciation and add anything. While it does take paperwork, I don't think it's quite as huge a paperwork problem as we want to talk about. I think it's important to put it in relationship to local government or to counties. Counties are currently struggling to provide service. We've been impacted with ballot measure 5, ballot measure 4750. We provide some very essential services to the community. I think if you look at most counties, you will find that if anyone's arrested in your community, that they are booked at a county jail, and that's a very essential service that we provide for all the citizens of the state. It doesn't matter if it's a state law or a county ordinance or a city ordinance. That's a service that's provided. So you really come down to talking about how we provide services and the needs of small business. And, of course, I want to reiterate that we're not opposed to small business. That's not what we're talking about. It really becomes a question for us of how we're going to provide those services. We talk about this being an ad valorem tax. Yes, it is an ad valorem tax, and you pay on the value of the property. That's the nature of what this tax is. It's not an income tax. We clearly understand that. When we take all those things into consideration, first of all, that counties are sensitive to small businesses. We've addressed this in the recent past. We think this one goes beyond the fairness issue. I mean, it goes to the point where it becomes a direct revenue loss to local governments. It gets it out of balance, and we would certainly urge that 2111 be opposed. We don't think it's appropriate at this time. It's been addressed, and we would urge the committee to vote against it, and we would certainly be willing to answer any questions that you have.
Question for Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Steve, would you support some gradual increase in this bill and maybe an indexing of it for inflation so that the value of the $10,000 limit doesn't diminish over time?
I really haven't considered that. Excuse me, Chairman Shetterly, Representative Witt. We haven't had those discussions. I think our concern is basically what it does to the revenues of local government, you know, how we deal with that. I think part of our feeling is there is shifting of the burden, so to speak, inside the community. Either the general taxpayer is going to have less services to benefit a smaller group. We would certainly be open to have those discussions, but we have not taken a position on those.
Thank you.
Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question was similar to Representative Witt's. If there was a way to make this more revenue neutral, if you will, it appears that there are some administrative costs to collecting this tax, and I'm wondering if at a particular threshold it's less worth your while, but perhaps doubling it puts it, you know, makes it jump beyond that threshold. Is that something that you've considered?
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, we did that in 97, mm-hmm. You know, and that hasn't been that long ago. We have not been shown that there's there's a savings. I think if you look at, as my testimony says, the four large counties, there's a savings of about $92,000, plus or minus, and it costs over $300,000. So I'm not sure that effort is worth it right now. We've had that look, and I think we agreed that there was some administrative savings, and we supported that. But this goes beyond that.
Yes.
So at any point, 12,000, 13, you know, I'm saying, I mean, it would virtually be a loss to you above the $10,000 threshold, because some of the fiscal impact statements that I just looked at talked about, you know, that savings. And I'm just wondering that if the savings is greater at the lower end, then it would be way up towards the $20,000 mark.
Yes. Mr. Chair?
Yes. Mr. Chair, for the record, Gil Riddell, Association of Oregon Counties. Representative Carlson, just a little bit of background. In the 97 session, there was some resistance to our brothers and sisters in the public sector about supporting the small business idea of canceling up to the 10,000 threshold. We, however, stood with small business for a couple of reasons. First of all, it addressed over half of the small business property taxpayers. It canceled taxes for them. And it was some of the loss could have been made up by an increase in the rate setting process for Measure 50. We also found that there was some administrative savings to counties. Above the 10,000 level, it began to become out of balance and became extremely so, we believe, with a $20,000 threshold, which would be a 3-to-1 sort of factor. The other bit of background information on the paperwork. It's our understanding that this paperwork will be done in any event for the income tax process. What counties do is, after they receive a return from the taxpayer, the next year they'll send a copy of that return back to the taxpayer, virtually filled out. The only thing the taxpayer has to do is make the changes, any amendments to address or to the inventory. So in terms of paperwork, this part of the personal property, this part of the taxing paperwork is quite minimal, particularly compared to the income tax side of it.
Okay.
Representative Bates. You know, if there's anything in this bill or in law that would prevent a county from imposing a simple business registration fee for all businesses below $20,000 and make it a lower fee, it hit everybody, be very simple, very straightforward, there wouldn't have to be accounting for it, and it would still be budget neutral for you that way. You'd be picking up the businesses below 10,000, as well as the ones of 10,000, 20,000, and it'd be a lower fee that might be acceptable to everybody.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, Representative Bates, that may work well for those counties wishing to impose it. However, you still would have a lost school revenue. You have about $3.2 million in play with this concept per biennium for purely for school revenue. The county or city, particular jurisdiction, may impose a registration. It would be it would vary from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. Business wouldn't like it. They'd get confused coming from one city to another, having different standards. It'd be something we certainly could talk about and think about, but you still, I think, need to address the $3.2 million of school losses, school revenue losses that would come with this bill.
Anybody else? All right, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Michelle Deister. And Marge Kefori. Sure, come on up. Well, Marge, Michelle.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Michelle Deister with the League of Oregon Cities. I think the Association of Oregon Counties really hit upon many of the same concerns that we have. So with that in mind, I will be brief. The League of Oregon Cities opposes House Bill 2111. These funds that are realized from this assessment support services such as public protection, street improvements, sewers, water systems, libraries, and parks. Increasing the minimum value at which personal property is taxed would result in a loss of revenue that cities are unable to recoup due to property tax limitations imposed by Measure 50. The personal property tax threshold was increased from $3,000 to $10,000 in 97-98, as has been mentioned, and an analysis by the Economic and Community Development Department that is contained in the tax expenditure report has indicated that this change has been successful in reducing the filing burden for small businesses, and that this change is consistent with Oregon's desire to encourage entrepreneurial activity in the state. Therefore, we see no reason to increase the property tax exemption threshold to an amount that drastically exceeds the rate of inflation and results in a loss of revenue, not only for cities, but for counties and school districts and special districts. Local governments must maintain existing sources of revenue to provide the services necessary to help those small businesses grow and thrive. So, thank you.
Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. March Kafouri, representing the City of Portland. I want to avoid having us all say the same things over and over again, so I'll try to be very brief as well. I do want to say, Representative Williams, I'm very sorry about those piano teachers that are hiding out in your county or your city, and we don't like to think that we're, through our tax policies, driving them underground. That's certainly not our intent. I do want to say this, though, and that is that it may be that the personal property tax threshold is too low. It may be that it's too high. It may be that it makes sense. It may be that it doesn't make sense. It may be that it's viewed as being unfair or fair.
Mr. Chair, I just want to object. She's starting to talk like a legislator.
Out of both sides of my mouth. But, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee,
President Company accepted.
Of course. It is part of overall tax policy that we have now. And what I am urging that this committee do is to put these kinds of requests in the context of some sort of tax policy, so that we can treat things in a holistic and sensible way, so that you're constructing good tax policy for all sectors of the economy rather than making ad hoc decisions with some perhaps unintended consequences. In this case, the consequence to Multnomah County taxing jurisdictions is about $1 million a year. We don't have it. We're cutting budgets just like you are. And I know that you all are aware of the financial situations of your districts as well as the financial situation of the state as a whole. So we would ask that if you consider this bill, you consider it in setting it in the context of overall sound tax policy for the state.
Well, Marge, now that you mentioned context, one thing, I'm sitting up here, and I don't have the numbers in my head, but I've asked Elizabeth to look back and gather some information about this. I don't want to signal anything here other than I just want information. In context, we passed a number of tax collectors' bills earlier this session. It seems to me the effect of at least several was to increase collections, not raise taxes, but through whatever the changes we were making in these tax collectors' bills, the one that Diane Belt kept bringing to us one after the other. And it seemed like several of those had positive impacts in revenue, like property tax collections. Am I right? That's also a context I want to look at this bill in, too, because we've done some things here that have increased collections at the county level.
And I don't know that I'm the right person to ask that question.
Oh, no, but you said
those
would
be the county.
That set me
up. County people. Sorry.
Mr. Chair, committee members, I'm Philip Fell, representing the City of Eugene. I think I can be even more succinct, perhaps, than was the City of Portland. I would like to echo what Marge has said. We have not heard a tax policy discussion here. What we have heard is that it's tough being a small businessman, particularly as you head into an economic slump, and we know that. Perhaps a better perspective, I'm sorry, a better approach might be, to, as Marge suggested, get it in the context of the overall tax code. If small businesses are that significant, then they're probably going to need breaks of more than $200 or so a piece if they're going to try to capitalize. So I, too, would encourage you to put it in, in a broader perspective, and, in fact, if it turns out after investigation that it's a really good idea, always, of course, possible to pay it out of income tax revenues, since the small businesses will be generating them for you while we'll be pulling in mostly costs.
Elizabeth, we've had some testimony here from the last groups of witnesses about the impact on the general fund through the local revenues. Why don't we see that in the revenue impact statement? The school fund issue. Like we did in the...
You mean as far as the breakdown for schools?
Well, yeah, like we did in the FCC exemption bill. I think we had the numbers there that identified the impact on school funding. Yes. Doesn't this work the same way?
Sure. Family Shelterly, that's right. I mean, it would be about 40% of that. So what, $4
million? 3.2 or something like that. Okay.
But I can give you a breakdown by county if you want that kind of a thing.
A little information never hurt. I'd also like to see what I've asked Elizabeth to give us the netting effect of some of these other property tax bills that we did earlier in the session.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Would it be possible also to take a look at one of the ideas that Representative Witt and I were throwing around at maybe at a lower level, like indexed for inflation or whatever, just taking the 10, to see whether the offset actually makes it more revenue neutral?
If anybody wants Elizabeth to prepare anything, ask her and she'll do it, and we'll have that in front of her.
I'd just be curious, yeah, you know, if there was a small amount that we could increase it that would not be as onerous on school funding and counties and such.
Okay. Thank you, everybody. Appreciate input. Anybody else wish to be heard on House Bill 2111? Yes, John. Another stealth witness.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Phillips with the Oregon Department of Revenue, and I really hadn't intended to testify, but one thing Representative Bates brought up, I'd like to just make a comment about. Measure 5 did anticipate, or I think the crafters of it anticipated, the fact that because of the limits imposed by Measure 5 with the $10 and the $5 limitations, that there might be an effort by local governments otherwise needing revenues to switch to fees, charges, or assessments. And so there is the possibility, depending on how the language is crafted by the county or local government, that if switching the ad valorem tax to a fee might end up being a tax on property anyway and still be subject to the tax statement and compression. So I just want to point that out. I'm not saying it's impossible, but that may be one of the reasons why local government might not. That's all I had to say.
All right. Thank you very much. Anybody else? Okay, we will.
Can I ask one last question?
Yeah.
Actually, Alan pointed this out to me, Representative Brown. One of the things we talk about in taxing here is the efficiency of the taxing.
Right.
Or the cost to collect those taxes. Paul's talked to us a lot about that. Elizabeth, is this a particularly inefficient tax? I mean, it looks like it takes a lot of money to collect the tax below $10,000, like a third of what you get this much back, but it costs a third to collect it. It doesn't seem like a very efficient tax to me.
Are you looking at the $92,000 to collect $300,000 or something like that?
Representative Bates, I think that's a fair conclusion. I mean, I think when you're looking at just a flat tax, it's much simpler.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Gil.
Thanks.
Thank you.
That was Jared. I just wanted a point of clarification. Yes, Representative Bates, the $300,000 in that paragraph relates only to the county share of revenues that would be lost by doubling the threshold. It doesn't relate to all the revenues collected. Counties collect revenues for, of course, themselves, the cities, the special districts, and the schools. I didn't want that confusion.
Okay. So your figure there in that second bullet is the cost between $92,000 and $99,000 annually. That is for the whole collection process within this I guess, savings that would be achieved, and the impact of $302,000 is just for the county.
Precisely, Mr. Chair.
And the rest of it would be on the
cities?
Special district.
Oh, you mean how much? What's the dollar amount, you know, in those four counties?
Well, let's see if I can do the math. Maybe Lisbeth's your economist.
Well, we can get that, too.
We can get $300,000 would be...
Don't worry about it now. We'll get that information. That's worth, yeah. It's,
okay.
Okay. I'm almost afraid to ask. Anybody else want to be heard today? All right. Then we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2111. And let's open a work session on House Bill 2033. Elizabeth, would you please remind us where we were when we last saw this?
Chairman Shetterly and committee members, with 2033, this was the processed agricultural processing tax credit, and we went through various details and the example and things of the tax credit and how it would work. And basically, just to refresh your memory, for as far as the revenue impact for the local government, there could be potentially a reduction in local revenues, and it's mainly from Section 7 of the bill. There's a little bit of uncertainty there on whether or not property that is currently classified as industrial property, if the classification is changed from industrial to farm use machinery and equipment, then some of that machinery and equipment may be considered farm use and removed from the tax rolls, and then that would be reducing local revenue. In addition, also you have a difference in change property ratio of industrial property versus the farm use property, where the industrial property change ratio is close to 1, where the change property ratio can be closer to like 0.75 in various counties. So if there's new machinery and equipment purchased for the processing facility, then the amount of the value that is actually added to the tax roll would be less if the machinery and equipment is actually classified as farm use rather than as industrial property. And as far as the state government, I did get state government effect. I got some additional information from the Department of Revenue. And so these revenue numbers have been revised upward slightly. In the 2103, the reduction in state general fund revenue estimated at $509,775 versus an $1.48 million in the 2003-05 biennium. And it was around $350,000 initially and $1
million. Well, let me see. I'm looking at the revenue impact statement from when we heard this bill on the 14th,
yeah.
And that shows local government none. And now you, did,
yeah.
I don't know, did we have testimony to that effect last time? I don't remember hearing about the local.
Chairman Shetterly, that's correct. We did not have testimony on Section 7, really, with some of those ambiguities. That's just things that I heard from talking with county assessors about the bill and the Department of Revenue. So, and the reason why I think I put it later on in the bill last time, the same point, that I should have put it under local government. So that's why I put it there.
Mm.
Yeah, I put it at the end.
Yeah.
But anyway, so the most recent revenue impact is the 322.01 revenue impact.
I'm sorry, 322.01?
Yeah. That's the one you're
looking at. The date.
Three.
Okay, yeah, uh-huh. Right. Okay.
Do we have copies?
You've got a revenue impact statement dated today.
Yeah.
Upper right hand corner 3-2201. And tell me again, Elizabeth, how we went from 350,000 to
510. Chairman Federley, I got additional information from Polk County, Yamhill. I added some value in for Tillamook County. So there was just some areas in which I had added in this additional value that helped increase that. So it just sometimes takes time for me to get all this information from counties, get the reporting, and Department of Revenue was helping me. And looking into some of the wineries and things like that in other parts of the state.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Representative Hess.
Thank you. We're trying to figure out, just for our own frame of reference, what percentage of this applied to wineries versus, at least I was, farms versus dairies versus livestock, and how that breaks out. I know it was dominated by wine growers to some extent, but if they're only 10% of this, I'd be interested to know if they're 90% of the
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'm Gary Conkling, and I represent the Oregon Wine Growers Association, and I apologize for being inattentive to Representative Hass's question, though I think I know what it is, because I was actually in a conversation with my county colleagues about the impact of Section 7, if I might address that first, and then I'll...
The question is how much of this is it's at wineries?
Yes. With respect to Section 7, the intent of including it from those of us who worked on the bill was as a classification issue, because in the work group, as you recall, that we had during the interim, it's very difficult to pinpoint farm processing equipment about which this tax credit is intended. But we neither tried nor, I think, actually would achieve through the language in this bill, actually allowing any equipment, apart from how it's classified, to not be taxable. If it was personal property related to actually farming activity, it would be exempt from tax. But personal property or real property that's involved in processing is subject to property tax. And as best I know, and as best as our attempt, if House Bill 2033 passed, it would still be subject to tax. So I don't believe the classification somehow will allow people to pull property, either personal or real property that's involved in processing, off the tax rolls just by how it's classified. I don't believe that that's actually something we could do, nor were we trying to do.
John, can you help us with this? I'll still get to your question.
Mm-hmm. John Tolsa, the Department of Revenue, Property Tax Division. My only thought on the loss of local revenue would be relative to the change in the property ratio. And that's the ratio that's used on all property when, as an exception to Measure 50. So if new property is brought on, to simulate the rollback that properties that existed in 1997 experienced, the new value, real market value, is multiplied by a changed property ratio. And in the Constitution and law, that is a ratio of all of that type of property, that class of properties, real market, to assessed value. So if you change the class of a property, like if you call industrial property residential, for example, then there would be a different changed property ratio applied to that. In this case, if we changed industrial to farm, there would be a different ratio applied. Industrial tends to have, as Elizabeth indicated, a ratio of 1, which means property that's industrial or commercial, let's say personal property, tends to depreciate, so the Measure 50 value tends to be the assessed value, and therefore there is no real differentiation. So that's why there may be loss of local revenue.
Can anybody quantify? 10,000 statewide or 5 million statewide?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Gary Conkling again, notwithstanding that, which I guess is a piece of news that I was unaware of, and I don't know, this wasn't even a discussion that occurred in connection with this particular provision when we talked about it. I guess I was just reacting to the words, and perhaps I'm reading more into it, but in this statement it says, some of the machinery and equipment may be considered farm use and removed from the county tax roll, reducing local revenues. I think that's what I was suggesting, is that isn't happening. The point that my colleague is making is that it may be valued at a slightly different at a different ratio or calculation, is I would take his word for it, but that's a much more minimal impact than certainly anybody's ability to remove a piece of property from the tax roll, which is not what we were trying to do.
John Phillips, we did take a look at the words in the bill and tried to see if in any way that would move property from that was classed as industrial or farm use into 307-400, which says that property of a farm use nature is exempt. So we were looking at that very carefully, and the way we read 307-400 is that it refers only to personal property, and that this bill refers to real property. So I dismissed that as a possibility, but I maybe didn't think of everything. I don't know if there's any other way.
Well, Mr. Chairman, again, Gary Conkling, I wish we were clever enough to have thought of this potential idea, which we didn't. As you recall, we got to this work group from the beginning of dealing with the taxation of personal property at wineries involving processing equipment that is subject to taxation. And while we, in pursuing that legislation last session, argued that there is some variability and some differing judgments that have been given us by various court authorities, the truth of the matter is that in the work group, the whole thesis of House Bill 2033 is not to change local property taxes, but rather to provide people that have qualifying on-site farm processing equipment with a tax credit that roughly compensates for the property taxes they are paying and will continue to pay and expect to go up if they invest.
I want to get to Representative Hass's question, to which this is...
yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hass, I don't know that I can exactly quantify it, but I don't think there's any question that a high percentage of wineries are going to be among the early people who will take advantage of this. There are most wineries have as part of their operations vineyards. So they are in the majority on they would meet the qualifications that are in this bill. There are some wineries that have their processing on non-EFU land, and they would not. An example is Panther Creek Winery, for example, that has its wine-producing facilities in downtown McMinnville, and its vineyard land is separate, so it would not meet this test. But the majority of wineries do. And I suspect that at least in the beginning, other commodity groups will be more inclined to make new investments for on-site processing, whereas we already do, and for us, this will be an incentive for us to increase, expand, replace, that type of thing. And our active trader business does involve continuing investment in machinery and equipment to process wine.
Thank you. I didn't mean to insert my question.
No, that's okay. I want to get that answered. Let me ask this, Elizabeth and John, perhaps for you. Is this an imponderable that will remain an imponderable, or is there, if we held this over for a week, could we have an answer to this issue on local revenues? I want to move this thing. I will say, though, when this gets to the Senate, it's going to sit until, under the agreement we have between Senate and House, it's going to sit anyway until we get to the rebalancing with the given the fiscal impact. So we have some time on this thing. I just assume no, I guess, as long as the question's been raised. Can we quantify it? If we can't, then we just, I guess, we go ahead and deal with this on that basis. But if we can quantify it, I'd like to at least have a sense of a number or a range anyway.
Chairman Shadley, I'll just respond by saying I know, this is the letter that I have from Benton County, basically, listing various things that they're concerned about, and I haven't had a chance to, get back and talk with her. And so, yeah, if you held it off another week, at least I could get a chance to talk with her and make sure that, maybe we can go through the bill and kind of alleviate some of those concerns that she has, which brought forward the most concrete, in my mind, of, and this was brought forward by someone in the interim group whose constituent is in Benton County. So, we know what farm, that particular section is targeting. And so that's why I think that was brought to light from Benton County in particular.
We'd certainly be happy to work with Legislative Revenue Office.
Okay, let's try. I would hate to get to the floor and have somebody look at the revenue impact statement and ask the carrier, there could be a reduction. Will there be? How much? And the carrier just say, well, we talked about it, and we decided not to find out. So at least let's try.
Sure.
Let's do that. And try and put this down for next week, no more than a week from today. And we'll bring this back just to clarify that so we know what we're doing when we move this thing out. Okay? All right.
Thanks.
Close the work session on House Bill 2033, and we are adjourned.